Hello, my friend, and welcome to the 470th episode of the Sales Podcast. I'm Wes Schaefer, the Sales Whisperer, your host. Today we have three-time author, entrepreneur, invested in over 15 companies. The dude knows what the heck is going on. His name is Sean Castrina. We're going to talk about why you need to develop your leadership skills, why in business you need to have a plan and it needs to be bold, why money loves speed, why money loves momentum, when to call it a day, what he's tracking, how he's tracking it, and how to treat your accountant. We're getting into staffing. We're getting into your number one job as a business owner and what he teaches his business partners. So you're in for a treat. I'm recording this intro November 2nd. So as you listen to this, it could be Armageddon. And again, probably not. So look, just keep on keeping on, okay? Plan for the worst, hope for the best. You know, I went to jiu-jitsu today. I'll go to the gym tomorrow. I'll go to jiu-jitsu on Wednesday after the election. I just want Air Force to beat Army, okay? We want to beat Army. Bring back the Commander-in-Chief's trophy, but I digress. You know, we talk about all these kind of things. I go deeper into the interviews, answer your questions in a private group, answer the questions live every Monday, 9 a.m. Pacific, in the Implementors. So I changed the name. I've always had the Implementors. It's a free group on the Facebook, but the Implementors Advanced is the paid group. Super affordable. You can go month to month. You can save 50% and go for a year. Lots of videos, templates, boilerplate agreements, the exact proposal templates I use to close the majority of my deals. We talked about it today, actually. I got great feedback from Fernando on using that template. So kudos to Fernando for applying what he's learning. It's a crazy world, okay? You need to surround yourself with good people, optimistic people, people that implement, people that are willing to be a mentor, and people that you can mentor. You know, in our jiu-jitsu training, we're always pairing up with lower belts with higher belts. So the higher belts can teach. You know, the instructor, we may have 30 or 40 people in a class. He can't get to everybody one-on-one. And when you teach, when you share some knowledge, some wisdom, you get additional insights. That's why I called it the Implementors. You've got to apply what you learn and then teach what you learn. And it's not for my benefit. It's for yours. Okay. So come check us out. Implementors.com. Now let's bring on Mr. Sean. Sean Castrina, three-time author, 15-time entrepreneur.
I don't know. Actually, sure, more than 20. I just say Sean Castrina, author and entrepreneur. There you go. How simple is that? Here we go.
All the way from Charlottesville, man.
That's
welcome
it, man,
to the Sales Podcast. Taking control right from the beginning. I'm not sure if I like that or not. We're going to figure this out, though, as we go. I can always hit delete, right?
Exactly.
So what's going on, man? It's past beer 30 for you, and you're on the show. So I appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, no, I'm looking forward to it.
So I just want to drop this in right from the beginning. 8 unbreakable rules for business startup success. We're linking to that. The greatest entrepreneur in the world, the tale of 7 pillars, surviving startup to becoming the giant. So I like that. And the world's greatest business plan that works.
Yeah. That's the secret to it. That's what makes my business plan book a little different.
Yeah, I mean, having one that works, I guess that's better than just having a business plan, huh?
I think so.
So what the heck, man? Who died and made you king to write something called the greatest business plan, the greatest entrepreneur? What? I mean, come on.
You know, if you're going to take a position, always take a bold one, because then you got to live up to it. So that's always been – I'm a former Division I athlete, so I just remember people would always say, like, what are you going to do in your match this weekend? Because I was a college wrestler, and I go, well, I'm going to win, of course, no matter who it was against, because, you know, you got to build up the hype. But, you know, the business plan book, my son, he was graduating from high school, and he was starting a business, and actually it's doing really well. And I wanted him to go through a business plan. So, you know, I just bought one from Amazon, like every other human being, like Business Plan for Dummies. I mean, I had what I normally do But I wanted him to go through the exercise of it. You know, 20 some years into it, I have a very abbreviated thing that I look at. And I'd buy one book and one was worse than the next. They were fantasies. They were like 350 pages. They had financial projections that were total fantasy. Nobody can tell you what your company's going to make. Let me just tell you that right away. And probably the biggest problem I had with the business plan books out there and why I wrote mine is in chapter one, you know, Susie has this great idea for a business. Susie has business, you know, business A. In chapter 15, Susie's business is doing great. She has the perfect culture. She's given to philanthropy. She, you know, it is the world's greatest business. They got money in reserves. Like they reverse engineer the business plan with it working. See, in chapter 15, they've already made the assumption it's going to work. Well, the statistics tell me 9 out of 10 will not make it to year 10. I've had 3 companies make it to year 20. So I do feel like I kind of know what it takes to build a sustainable, durable business. And I find these business plan books are just they're fantasies. They reverse engineer the math. So the financial projection is whatever you needed to pay your bills is their financial projection. I have never yet in over 20 companies had one do as well as I thought it would do. Never. And I've had ones, you know, that were exceeded beyond, you know, it's kind of like I've never had anything kind of what I thought. Either they did way more than I ever expected, and that was a pleasant surprise, or they just died at the vine. Yeah. So I've never had a perfect financial projection, I guess is my point, where I need $5,000 rent, this much labor, I need this much for marketing, and I just happened to get that in chapter 3. It's a fantasy.
I remember years ago going to the SBA. Oh my gosh. These guys would volunteer like at SCORE.
Oh yeah. Oh, there you go.
I mean, I even wrote a blog post. I'm like, don't go to the SBA website. Yeah. It's like, and look up business plans. I mean, you're going to hit your head on your keyboard and knock yourself unconscious. It's not going to be good.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about it is if you just watch Shark Tank, you know, they give you the basic things that matter in a business plan. If you really think about it, these guys are going to make $1 million investment. I would listen to their questions because they typically hit all the important ones.
Yeah.
How much money has your business made so far? How many customers do you have? What is your margin?
Right.
What's your operating cost? How much you got in reserves? What did you put in to get this thing? I mean, it ain't rocket science.
Right. So you've started a lot of businesses. Your son's getting started. Did you just want to give him, I don't even know what word to use, a more modern or up-to-date or more currently accepted business plan just so he wouldn't be skewed by you, or like what led you to Amazon saying?
I knew I could have gave him a cheat sheet because I have my own. Like I can vet a business in about 6 or 7 questions. I just went through it kind of like if I was on Shark Tank. I know what to ask because people pitch me all the time. So I know the kind of the important things. But I wanted him to be able to his business idea to take a punch.
Okay.
And I am just as happy about the idea that doesn't dive the book. In other words, if I talk you out of going forward with it, I'm just as happy because I saved you money and great aggravation. And if my business plan can knock you out, the marketplace is going to absolutely destroy you.
Right. What do you think of the concept of, you know, sell it first, then build it?
Yeah, I think that's a massive mistake.
Okay.
But I think you build it, but I'm going to play with that a little bit. I think you build it to sell. But you don't go in it like you're going to sell it. I, you know, it's the old thing. It's like going into a marriage looking to get divorced. I mean, to some degree, if you go into a business, got to.
Okay. Now, and I agree. I know where you're going with that.
We can fight a little bit on this. This is good.
I agree. I mean more of a product versus the actual business. So let me elaborate. Because
The
internet marketing world, or like I do various coaching, right? I'm going to launch a 30-day coaching program and to really just push people like literally 30 days. Every day we're going to get on a call. I'm going to just hold them accountable, get them to move forward. Even if all I do that day is hold on and don't fall backwards. Right. And so I'm going to pre-sell it. You know, I'm going to see if there's any interest before I spend a lot of time building out the model.
No, I absolutely believe that. You micro start every business.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
It should be started at a micro business, a fraction of its full self. It's in my business plan. That's one of my absolute, do not quit your day job. You beta test your business. You make sure it has a pulse. You make sure you have an audience. Yeah, I'm a fanatic about what you're talking about.
Gotcha. Because, yeah, I think what you were maybe assuming and is like trying to sell the business before you start it, blah, blah, blah.
People that DM me that, and they actually think that. And there's that rare exception where, you know, I'm starting this business and they already think they're going to get an out.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, you know, I have not seen that happen often in my lifetime.
Right. Yeah, it's like, I think maybe it's too much pop culture. Oh, he had a 7-figure, 8-figure exit. Everybody wants to have that on their LinkedIn bio. It's like, well, what if you like what you're doing? Maybe you don't want to exit it.
Yeah, I got offered big money. It was funny. I got offered big money a few months ago to sell one of my businesses. And I'm like, no, because when I did the math, you know, it was good money, the lump sum of it. But what I make per year for how little I work, the math didn't add up. You know, I'm like, well, what am I going to, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Plus I have all these people that I have business partners and people that count on me. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm for an exit and I think there are times that you definitely sell, but they'd have to real. I told them you have to add a zero to whatever you were thinking.
Yeah. So I want to cover some of the fundamentals. And maybe you can with this question, because I think the fundamentals are always the fundamentals.
No, they are in everything.
You know, but, you know, some people might be thinking, well, this time it's different. We got COVID. We got a crazy election and the world, we might get a second wave and whatever. So, I mean, as we end 2020, as we roll into 2021, as we record this, we don't know yet who's going to be president. Will it be contested? What's Russia going to do? What's China going to do? I mean, what do you do? What do you tell entrepreneurs and salespeople, you know, in uncertain times, you know, how do you focus? Where do you focus to ensure you continue to grow?
I mean, barring you don't have a gym or a restaurant, because I think there are businesses that are definitely, you know, are difficult. Though if I had a restaurant, I would be doing, I would have created like family meals and did like family. I mean, there's a pivot there. There's a pivot in every business almost. So barring that, I think there's fundamentals of business. You just have to, during the virus, you have to say, what am I able to provide based on condition A? Now, you may have to change completely how you do it, but things change. And you have to pivot. There's just no getting around it. You have to pivot. And if you can't pivot, guess what? You may not survive. And that's what people don't want to hear. When I tell people that if you can't pivot and you don't have enough reserves, you may not live to fight another day. I mean, that's just the sad truth to the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And if you went down because of a pandemic, I mean, that is a great one to go down by. I mean, this is a 1-in-100-year event. It is possible that you know, nobody wants to hear this, that you don't keep throwing good into a volcano and you call it a day. There are some businesses that I know if I had, I possibly would and live to fight another day in another business and do things again. I do think there are times when you got to look at the circumstances and go, okay, I have no money coming in, nothing but money going out, and I don't know when it's going to stop. See, that's the problem. When I don't know when it's going to stop, you know, and again, this is not the happiest conversation anybody wants to hear, but there are situations like that. I own many companies and we pivoted. We don't have the same revenue we had, but we're fine because we never, you know, we lived smart prior to that. We had margins. We put money in reserves. We had, you know, a lot of repeat customers. So, you know, we lived to fight another day.
Right. Have you ever had to throw in a towel on a business?
Oh, absolutely. There's always a time. This whole idea that, you know, you don't quit. Let me give you the criteria for when you call it a day, because I think there are times when you got to call it a day. You call it a day when nobody wants what you're selling. Okay, where you launched it and at some point you don't have buyers. Or number two, you don't know how to attract them anymore. Number three, they're not willing to pay what you need to pay your bills. I mean, there's a margin there that has to be there. So again, if you have whatever you have, the marketplace shows no more interest in. Okay. Your sales are dramatically down. Your traffic is dramatically down. Okay. Your marketing efforts, you can't figure out how to attract them anymore. So they're not coming after you and you don't know how to go get them. And number three is you can't sell what you have. You can't sell enough of it to stay in business, and you can't sell it with the margin you need. So you're kind of get, you know, any of that combination of three or four of those, to me, you gotta look and go, well, I don't know how you survive that. I mean, look at every business that went out of business, Blockbuster Video, Circuit City, JCPenney. It's everything I'm talking about. What happened? Number one is customers lost interest in their business model. Felt like they could buy it somewhere else. I mean, that at the end of the day, that was the big thing. And they couldn't attract any more customers. So the sales were down. When you don't have sales and you don't have revenue, you can't pay your bills. You go out of business. Line them up. I'll go through all your stalwart companies, and I just told you how they all went out of business.
So when do you know that little cut, that little bleed is unstoppable and is eventually going to turn into an infection and gangrene and kill you, you know, versus, oh, it's just a little cut. We need to just focus on it, make sure and treat the wound, and we'll be okay.
Yeah. What I say, I get a spreadsheet at between 4:30 and 4:45 every single day, no matter where I am anywhere in the world. It is a Excel spreadsheet. It shows all my companies and it shows me traffic, customer interest, you know, how customers reach out to us, how everything. It gives me all my key metrics. I talk about this in my Unbreakable Rules, that you got to have a dashboard. You got to know your numbers, because that you can see it. There's a difference between a blimp, you know, a little blip on the radar, and a trend, and a sustained trend. I tell my staff, and I train my partners, I can see problems before they arise, because I see tremors, little consistencies, little 3 and 4 day patterns, little 3 and 4 week patterns. And you got to constantly be looking for them. You got to look at what marketing worked a year ago that's not working now. You got to trace, you got to track everything. And when you do that, it's like flying a kite. A startup is like flying a kite, is what I said. Any little piece of wind can bring it down. Your goal is to get a durable business. And that's, you know, more like, you know, having a barge in the water. You know, assuming you don't hit an iceberg or a lighthouse, you're okay. That you try to build your business to that. But many businesses are very fragile, and you've got to look out for trends, profit trends that are going down, loss of interest. You know, customers aren't reaching out to you at the level they did. Your expenses are maybe to produce what it is you're selling, the costs are creeping up and your margins are getting smaller. You just got to be alert to all those things.
You mean you just can't ignore a problem and it won't go away?
Man, if you can do better than me, if you can figure it out, I find that problems never go away, and they just get bigger.
They multiply and come back with friends.
Yeah, what is it? It masticizes, I think is the word, but it's a thing.
It's crazy, huh? So when, who do you know, or how do you know when to start tracking this? When to offload it to someone, right? Because a lot of entrepreneurs, they're just frantic, right? They can't sleep. They're up. They're grinding. They're hustling. They're grinding some more. You know, it's like the old joke. You know, you see the accountant just falling behind and wads of paper everywhere and the phone ringing. He's just got a nubby little pencil there. And it's like, hey, dude, why don't you go to the store and buy a calculator? He's like, who has time to – I can't leave my business to go to the store and get a calculator. You know, well, like – dude,
whenever I talk to a business owner and they tell me they meet with their accountant every 3 months, I know that they're going to have problems. Because by the time you find out about the problem, the trend is already embedded into, you know, into it. I have a CPA in my office, and even when I didn't, I had a CPA that would come in 2 days a week and sit, you know, and alert me to things, give me these critical numbers. So you got to have the data. And I'm not trying to be the Dr. Kevorkian in a business right here, you know, Dr. Death, but you know, your business, you got to look at the fundamentals. And we were talking about them before, but the fundamentals are really simple. do you have a product and or a service that customers want? I mean, at the end of the day, that's how you stay in business. I mean, period. That's as boring as it can get. But if people are no longer expressing interest in your product, you must change something. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. What I do at the end of every year, I do two things, and I think it's why I've started so many companies and they've done well. Two very critical exercises that I do. Number one is I do a war game scenario. And I've never thought about a pandemic before, so this is a total new one. But I put on the table everything that could put me out of business. Okay, what could really put me out of a business? Maybe something within my industry massively changes, regulations. I own, you know, some construction companies. I remember when mold was getting really big and asbestos, and they were making you get more licensing for that. So that was something serious. But whatever the industry, however it changes, like Blockbuster Video, how they didn't do a war game scenario. Oh my gosh, I noticed that there's these red boxes outside every grocery store and drugstore. And you don't need to have 5,000 square feet of retail space. You just need a box. And we're going to put 80% of the most rented movies, new releases, right in this box. Okay, they didn't notice Netflix was mailing movies to people's houses. They could keep them basically indefinitely until they mailed them back, and then they could Zoom it. Not Zoom it, I'm sorry, but stream it. No, the point is you got to do war game scenario. Sears and JCPenney, you know, you're mailing out catalogs when it was online. 10 years later, you're still mailing out a catalog. I mean, you've got to see, you know, what could put you out of business. You got to be hyper alert to that. And I go through that at the end of every year. I look at, you know, what could really put us out of business? Where are we vulnerable? I want to build a moat around my businesses. So that's, you know, number one. Number two is I want to always add a new profit stream every single year. And I look at it like a new business. Every year I want to add a new business, a new fresh profit stream to my businesses, because what I've learned is where I was making money 5 years ago, I'm not making money today as much as I'd like to. Things change. And so if you put all your eggs in one basket, that's, you know, I want to have a lot of baskets. Let me put it that way. And look at Amazon. They do the same thing. Look at, they went with Amazon Prime. Okay. Then they buy Ring Doorbell. Then they buy Zappos. Then they, I mean, that they're an aggressive entrepreneur. They buy Whole Foods, start a grocery division, you know, plus they, you know, because of their, I forgot that their cloud technology is so unbelievable. They are building a moat so big around that company. So many massive profit streams. That Microsoft is an extraordinary entrepreneurial company. They buy companies as they get started, new profit streams. You know, what is it? Google bought YouTube. You can keep going down the line. I mean, you got to think entrepreneurial. I mean, these are massive companies that are still making aggressive moves.
How do you balance, though, between, you know, do you want to be In-N-Out or do you want to be McDonald's? Right. In-N-Out, you know, you want a chicken sandwich or a salad. I mean, okay, tough luck. Don't go to In-N-Out.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously both are successful. You know, would you recommend In-N-Out start selling chicken sandwiches or test
it? No, they got In-N-Out Burger works. In-N-Out Burger. Sell a burger. The thing about it is Five Guys, which is big on the East Coast where I live, they sell burgers, hot dogs, French fries. Okay, it takes three people to run their kitchen. They have one person working the fryer, the hot dogs and the burgers. They've got one person working the French fries. They got one person at the front taking the orders. I've never seen more than like four people in there. They're printing money. You can have a super niche market. Look at Subway. It takes one person to run a typical Subway. Has anybody had a Subway sandwich that they can honestly tell me is a good sandwich? No, in your entire life. Have you ever eaten a Subway sandwich that's the best sub I've ever had? Never. It's horrible. But they got like 25,000 of these because their system works. It's not like you eat a hamburger from McDonald's. You go, that's the best burger I've ever had. No, you don't. But you find yourself back there 2 weeks later because they're everywhere. They have the best locations. They're convenient. You know what you're going to get. There's a lot of ways to make money, people. And you can niche like In-N-Out Burger and all these other ones, and it works because niches are simple. They're simple to staff.
So, you know, somebody that they're bumping along, and maybe that's part of the problem, huh? If you're just bumping along instead of actively, aggressively growing.
And that's the difference. It's a mindset. There is a difference. And I'm not into the mindset, woo-woo. But I think one of the qualities you better have to be a successful entrepreneur is you better be competitive. You got to be competitive. And then, you know, I mean, Bill Gates was extraordinarily competitive. Steve Jobs, extraordinarily competitive. Don't think Jeff Bezos, extraordinarily. These people are competitive. But this, there's another, you know, another thing there. When you look at your, you know, there's a difference between being a business owner and an entrepreneur. And I think this is probably the biggest problem out there, that some people are business owners. Billy Bob, he started his, you know, auto shop, and he does oil changes and front end alignments, and he's happy. Don't get me wrong. He's happy. He's making 80 grand a year. He's got a few people working in the garage for him, you know, and somebody's working the front desk, and it's a good business. It's solid. He has one location. He's happy with it. Maybe, just maybe, he puts one on the other side of town. I'm not, that's not an entrepreneur to me. That's a business owner who had a couple entrepreneurial moments. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's no criticism of that. I see a business idea every 6 months. That doesn't mean I act on it, but my brain I've, you know, programmed my brain to constantly look for new opportunities for new expansions, new profit streams. And I think that your brain goes one way or the other. You either go in that lockdown mode where you kind of got your business going, you're happy, you're surviving. And that's, you know, we have a lot of people like that, and they just don't want to go out of business. If they could pass their business on to a family member, they couldn't be any happier in that scenario.
Right.
And then there's other people that want to do something that's kind of outrageous.
Well, so let's talk about that Billy Bob, because I think I have 27 cousins named Billy Bob.
Yeah. And I do. You've been to my family reunion then.
Does Billy Bob stay in the garage torquing wrenches and hire a COO or even a CEO to help him grow? Or does he hire mechanics, supervise them, and slowly extricate himself from the business to really grow?
Well, we know what he should do, but the reality is you can't tell Billy Bob what to do. So in the perfect world, and it's really the E-Myth, you should pull yourself out of the business so that you can run your business. But if Billy Bob, like my dad is an incredible mechanic, he was his whole life, there's nothing wrong with hiring somebody who can manage the business. I mean, if you like doing what you're doing, you like turning a wrench and you're gifted at it, I'm not telling you not to do that. I think if you have fun doing it and you're the best, there ain't nothing wrong with being the best. There ain't nothing wrong with everybody in that garage knowing you are the best, man. The owner is the best. So you got to have somebody that can run it. I just think I think that is just a different business model, and there's nothing wrong with it. What makes you happy, and can it be profitable? You know, as a general rule, typically as the owner, you want to extract yourself from anything that you can pay other people to do. You know, that's kind of a general rule. But, you know, if you're good at it and you like doing it, and the example, that's like a dentist office or a law office. The people that own it still practice law. Why? They love it. They're passionate about it. They went to school for forever doing it. So I don't think you necessarily got to pull yourself out of it. I just think you better have somebody who has good, who's can do what you choose not to do. Whatever it is that you're not going to do, you need to have somebody good at it. And I think you could do it either way, operations and.
So how do they know though? I mean, is there a rule of thumb? Is there a process to kind of stack the odds in their favor? Because, you know, let's say Billy Bob realized it. Maybe he is the best, but hey, he's getting older, you know, being under a car when it's 100 degrees or when it's 30 degrees. Like, man, this is just getting old. It's time to grow. You know.
You answered it. Once he realizes he doesn't want to do it, that's his go. That's the luxury of owning his business. So this is the good story about this is what you can do different than other people because you're a business owner is you have the opportunity right there. You know what? You go home, you're like, honey, I don't want to crawl under cars anymore. I realize it hit me today. It was 105 degrees and I don't want to do it. I'm going to hire another mechanic. That's the beauty of being a business owner. So let's say that doesn't hit you, but it hits you, you know, eventually. Because it's going to hit you. You have the opportunity to do that. And that's a great thing. So there's again, no wrong answer. But, you know, you'll typically get that aha moment to where you're like, either don't want to do it anymore or you're doing the business end of it. And you're not good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, to be frank, like my dad would have never been good at the business end of it. I mean, he could fix anything. but that's not his skill set. So I think you need to hire somebody to do what you are not good at. I think that's the preeminent hire. And I do it like this. It's the yin and the yang. It's the 1 + 1 = done. You plus one other person who would move the needle the furthest for you. Who's that one hire that if you made would help your business the most? And that's sadly what most small businesses don't do. They don't hire that one superstar that's either incredibly talented as a technician, or they're an unbelievable salesperson, which I recommend sales is like the first big hire, because if you can't sell your product, you're going to be in trouble. But you have a great operations person. You got to hire one critical hire that moves the needle. And that's sadly one of the major mistakes that small businesses don't make. They don't try to do. They try to save money, or they hire family and friends. And that is just one of the, one of my 8 unbreakable rules is that's, staffing is critical.
So this Bubba, right? He realized he didn't want to crawl into cars anymore, but he's a perfectionist. Right. He is the best. He's the best in 3 counties. Son, he can fix anything. Just put his ear. Yeah. He can hear you driving up. Yeah. He knows what the hell's wrong with your car. And so he's going to hire Bubba Jr. That is good, but not as great as him. He's 20. Yeah. Right. He grew up, handing daddy a wrench, when he was still drinking a bottle. He's very good, but he's not the greatest in 3 counties. How does Bubba keep from, it's like you got to give that young kid.
He works with him.
Yeah.
Well, he's got to work
with him. Room.
Or he's got to give him room. And then maybe he signs off at the end of every job. Before you hand it back to the customer, take me through or let me hear your strategy. I know working in business with my son, it's kind of like, okay, what's your plan? Like, how are you going to fix this? Let him fix it. And then at the end, take it for a spin or what, it's the old mentoring process. This isn't new in that you're going to have to take some time mentoring someone. And at some point in your business, you're going to have to do that anyway.
Yeah.
To make for a business to grow, you got to have a few of yous. You got to have some talented people in the building. And you're either going to hire them or train them, but they're not going to be there by accident.
Did you say I've got to have a ute? What's a ute?
Yeah, there you go. Somebody like you. You need somebody like you. It's funny. I was with one of my business partners, and we always go through this growth strategy at the end of the year. And I looked at him, and I said, Tony, he's drawing up all this stuff on whiteboards, and my head's getting dizzy. And I said, here, I erased everything. I'm going to tell you how to solve this problem and how to make more money next year, Tony. And I drew a stick figure on there. And I said, Tony, you need to hire and or train another Tony. That's it. I mean, everything you're talking about sounds great, but the problem is you need another you. I said, the reason why I make an extra zero above all my business partners, I've recruited all you all. See, I've duplicated me. I have 7 business partners. And I tell them, until you can do what I've done, your paycheck, your profit is limited. So that is one of the critical things, your ability to recruit and retain and motivate and identify talent. That is a superpower that great entrepreneurs have. And I would say more so than any one skill I have, that is my number one skill, not even close.
Right.
My ability to see talent in people, recruit them, get them to leave their jobs and come join a startup with me and take that risk a little bit. And that's what I've been doing for 25 years.
Were you always good at it, or were you just stubborn and stuck with it?
I can communicate in such a way that when I've asked partners why they did it, they go, I just was convinced it was going to succeed. They go, Sean, you give that energy that it's probably going to work, and I don't want to miss out on it. I think if anybody who's partnered with me in business, they're like, you're very organized. You think through things. And so, why not? So you got, and that's what every great entrepreneurs, Elon Musk or any of these people, Bill Gates, watch them convey their startup story. They believe it's going to work. And I bet you a lot of people jumped on board, and the ones who did made out okay. The point, but that's what founders have. You've got to have that. You've got to be able to convey your vision for what this company is going to do, because people are not going to work for you because you pay them the most. I never paid any of my people the most. I couldn't. It was a startup. So I had to sell them on the future and what we were going to do and how exciting this was going to be and the team we were going to put together and how we were going to, you know, change our industry or do something incredible. That is one of the skill sets that, you know, entrepreneurs have. And again, we know this. There's a difference between a business owner, an entrepreneur, and a great entrepreneur. Okay, we're going into different levels here. And I like to think, you know, three or four books later, and my tax returns would show you. I mean, I've kind of been working at this for a long time, and until I figured out partnering and critical staffing, I was just very average.
Mm-hmm. How did you learn that? Just trial and error?
You know, I had a chance early on, and I did it by accident, maybe, or whatever. But I started a company, and I owned, real quick story, is that I owned a direct mail magazine in 23 cities. And I worked with local publisher. I would recruit a publisher, place them in a city, and then I would rinse and repeat and do it in another city. Like, it was a direct mail magazine and it did really well. I started a handyman company because I tried to turn a home office in my house into an office. Trying to hire a handyman in my town was like trying to find a one-eyed leprechaun. It was unbelievable. I just didn't want a chandelier hanging over my head. So I said, I'm going to start a handyman company. Now, back then, I could not assemble a three-piece birdhouse. And 21 years later, I can't assemble a one-piece birdhouse. I am the least mechanical person on the planet. So I started this company. I'm pretty good at branding and creating traffic. 5 weeks into it, I had 54 phone calls for work. So I knew that I had hit something. Now, at that point, I was driving an hour away training these people in magazine. I probably could have walked away from my magazine. A lot of people would have done that. Sold it, walked away. What I did is I kept the magazine, allowed that to pay my bills. I took the profit that I would normally give to myself. That's what the normal startup person would do. And I brought on a partner who had been in construction 25 years so that he could be in the office and keep an eye on everybody and talk to customers and deal with customer issues. So I took I made the sacrifice to hire him with my profit. Within 3 years, we were doing over $1 million, and it was the smartest move I've ever done. And I've done that. I've rinsed and repeated that model for the last 21 years, but that was a critical decision I had to make. I could have sat in the office, made $100,000 a year, and basically did very little. And instead, I took my money and brought in someone to partner with me to be the 1+1=done. I handled the marketing, the systems, made the phone ring, and I let him oversee the day-to-day granular part of what we did, so he could interview a person and go, you know, yeah, this person knows what they're doing. And, you know, I didn't know. If you even told, you could lie to me and tell me anything and I'd hire you, because I didn't know what a good hire was. So I know I needed that person, and I did it. And that was the best decision I ever made. And that has been my formula for the last 21 years, finding the one person that I can put with me to in my companies. And it's kind of my superpower.
As you add companies or roll into a different industry, is it always the same person? Like, is it, because you're always you, right?
Yeah, I'm always me. They change, but they typically have a certain skill set.
Right. Okay.
They understand the industry way better than me. So in that situation, like, I didn't know anything about construction, clearly. So I bring in somebody who's an industry expert. They eat, drink, and sleep it. They understand it, every piece of it. But they've never, ever run a business before. They've been an employee in it. So that's the number one thing I look at. Number two is they want to own something. They know they're going to put as much time into it. So I need somebody with lots of time. They're going to eat, drink, and sleep this one thing. I don't want an entrepreneur. I don't want somebody who's going to get bored with this and try to do so. I want this to be their business for the rest of their life, and this is all they're going to think about. So, you know, and then integrity, you know, I don't ever want to be looking over my shoulders and, you know, and wonder if somebody's stealing money from the kitty. So I want somebody who's an absolute industry expert, and they're going to put their life into this, that they know this is their chance to make six figures or more. And I know they're going to give me everything they got, and I'm going to provide this startup capital. I'm good at getting companies off the ground. good at marketing. I'm good at making phone rings and driving traffic to it. But once I get it going, I want to hand it to you. I need you to run the day to day because why? I'm an entrepreneur. I'm going to go find something else. I'm going to rinse and repeat.
How much do you trust them though? Because I've got too many stores and too many people.
Because people partner incorrectly and they don't do it right. Number one is I have a CPA in my office and I have a CPA over top of that CPA who sends me a spreadsheet in an email in an Excel spreadsheet. I get it about, remember I talked about that 4:45 one? I get one about 4:30 to 5 a.m. with every bank account with an asterisk next to anything that would look suspicious. And every one of my partners know that. So they would probably get a theft for about 12 hours, but they would be figured out. I hire people that I don't want to think I'd need to do that. I mean, typically they've lived in the area for a long time, pretty solid citizens. You know, you can kind of look at that, but they know that there's extraordinary oversight.
Yeah. And yeah, there's gotta be, because I mean,
right. If you give a person an opportunity to steal on any given day, anybody in a weak moment, good people make bad decisions.
Yeah.
So I don't give them they'd never get away with it. So they just know that going in. I'm like, here, see this person here. She's a CPA in the office, but over her, you see Linda that comes in, she oversees that. And so I let them know that I put safeguards in.
Yeah.
And then I create systems. I'm a fanatic about systems so that things can't get through the cracks.
Yep. Amen. So how do you know when it's humming along nicely enough that you can take your eye off the ball a little bit and go into your next venture?
Yeah, typically it takes about 18 months, just as a general rule. I mean, that's the time frame that I'm always kind of thinking. But when I keep giving the business partner a little more rein, a little more responsibility, and I start looking at those metrics and I see the trends are positive, customers are happy. Typically what I got to teach them to do, the most important thing I find with bringing on partners, I got to teach them how to hire. They're normally not very good at hiring. That's something they've never done before. Like one thing I always teach when I'm like, we're interviewing and at the end of the interview, the person will leave and I'll go, well, would you hire them? And they'll go, well, yeah, of course. They're always going to hire people. It's the darndest thing I've ever seen. And I go, well, how would you rate them? 7. I go, but there's no more 7s in hiring. That's a secret. Never a 7. They're either a 6 or an 8. There is no such thing as a 7 deep down. I said, because a 7 is a 6 or it's a 7 is an 8. They got to be a 6 or an 8. They got to be one or the other. 6, you don't hire 6s. They don't move the needle. 8s move the needles because 8s can be 9s. So when I tell my partners, you can't hire any 7s, that makes them better at hiring. So I mentor them on the stuff I'm sharing on the podcast. I'm like, okay, can't hire 7s. They'll go, well, we can't hire that person. Then I go, great, let's keep interviewing because I didn't think that guy was that good anyway. You know, so working with them on hiring is critical and then working with them on creating systems so things don't fall through the cracks. That's like one of the most important thing is to just, I have to mentor them. I put all my time into working one-on-one with them and I truly let them run the company and I'm available to them. They can ask me questions, but I know that I got to be very involved for about the first 6 months big time, but then about a year and a half.
And are you making them a partner in the business? I mean, absolutely. Like sharing in the profits?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. 50, I always do 50-50.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I always do 50-50 because the bottom line is I haven't found I don't always make them 50% owner in the stock. Like I've done a 51-49 stock because I tell them when we have a coin flip, I'm making the decision because I have more business acumen than you do. And they understand that, but I always do a 50-50 profit share. The reason why I do that, because 5 years down the road, they're going to be working 90% harder than I am. And if you're getting more than them, that is not going to fly.
Yeah.
As much as you think it's going to fly, you can say, well, I founded it. I started it. I'm telling you that will any of the 50-50 I've just learned is fair. It just works. And I've always said, I'd rather have 50% of a lot than 100% of a little.
Have you ever offered like 60 or 70 or 80%?
No, never. Oh. That's never happening. I'm worth 50% because without me, there would be no business. And I always tell them that. I go, there's going to be a day 5 or 10 years down the road, you're going to go, man, I can't believe I'm splitting this with Sean. And I said, I just want you to remember that. And I want you to tell me that right now. I could not get this business off the ground without Sean. There would be no company without Sean. Because again, 5 or 10 years from now, when I'm doing, you know, 2 hours a week and you're splitting it with me, I don't want you to be pissing and moaning. Because zero times zero is always zero. So if there was never a company to start with, you'd still be an employee at your job.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, occasionally we have to have those reminders because they'll come back to me and try to get a little bit more. And I just give them that look like, are you really asking me this? I foresaw this. And no, you already, I always, I said, you know the answer, don't you? Yeah, I know. I was just going to ask.
I mean, is that a good sign?
I don't mind. I mean, that's just, it's normal to do it, but I don't ever do it because the problem is let's say you're 50-50 and you move it up to 55. You open Pandora's box. At some point, they're going to want 60 and 65. So my thing is keep it at 50. 50-50 just makes, it's a nice spread. And there's, once you go over that, you have opened up Pandora's box. So that's why I don't ever do it.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's just what has worked for me. I mean, other sure. people can do different things. And, you know, I'm just sharing with you what's worked for me over 25 years and, it's, you know, done, you know, it's made me a good bit of money.
Yeah. So what about this COVID world? Does everything work in a remote environment?
Oh, gosh, no. You know, I mean, clearly, you know, you can't fix a car remote. Can't get your gutters done remote. You can't, you know, there are certain things that you need people to do. But I do believe that commercial real estate is going to take a massive hammering over the next few years because the traditional lot of businesses that are on the phone and doing customer service, like any business that 90% of what you do has a computer and or a phone, I think that's going remote. So the big call centers, the big customer service centers, the big sales centers and all that, I think the model is definitely going to change. And it has, but I don't think it'll ever go back quite the way it did.
But I mean, what about like leading your teams, growing your teams? Does this have to be done in person or
can things be done? If you can motivate any way possible, but I mean, in person is always best. I think we all know that, but you can only do what you can do.
Yep.
I mean, you can't, you know, you gotta work with, you gotta work with the situation that you have.
Yep. The businesses you've created in the past, I mean, were they local where you could see them or were they?
Yeah. They're mine are all local, which I'm a brick and mortar, you know, kind of guy, very simple. I don't do like online complete businesses. I'm your typical guy that has employees every Friday. I get the big FedEx envelopes and we pay everybody. I'm one of those guys, you know, real tax returns. And it's just an unusual concept in this space. And that's why I said, if I didn't own a business, I would never write books.
Right.
Because that's all my material, stuff that I experience every single day. So, nothing really that special about me except real businesses. That's for sure.
And I love what you said before we started. You know, you're verified on these social media accounts, but you never log in. How do you build a trustworthy crew that's not going to say something stupid on social media?
Well, that's the key. Number one is that when I meet with my team, there is a thing about recruiting good teams is that you share with them your value structure. And like, if you look me up on Instagram, you'll notice that I did something that's unusual that I told my team, listen, I have incredible cars. Okay. I have cars that would make Jay-Z, you know, I've got a garage that's pretty nice. Okay. And I can fly private. All those things are great. But on my Instagram, I do a 2-minute video where I go, if you're following me because you think I'm going to show you my life every day, I'm the wrong person to follow.
Yeah.
You know, occasionally I may throw something out there. Follow me because I'm going to help you with your business. But if you're following me because this is going to be a pissing contest of whether how many cars, whose house is bigger and all this nonsense, I'm going to be the worst follower in the world because that doesn't interest me and I'm not going to share that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I told my team that from the very beginning that they know don't make any crazy promises out there. Like they ran something one time that was like, he can help you start a business in 5 days. I went through the roof. You know, I said, don't you ever make a promise that you don't run through me first. And that's just part of being a team. That's how you build teams is that you got to share with them your values. Like the people who work for me in my service companies, I'm like, do you not make a promise to a customer that we can't deliver on? Because if I find out you did, we are going to have a problem. So it's just a part of your DNA, a part of the culture that you build. And I'm very, when I communicate, oh, you know, I joke, you know, leadership. I was just, it was funny. I was training one of my partners and he had spoken to somebody and I'm like, Steven, you're not a leader. I go, you have a business card that says you're a leader, but you're not a leader. He goes, well, what do you mean? I go, Steven, asses don't move when you talk. You ever watch me talk, Steven? Asses scatter. They scatter when they hear my voice. And I'm not a big guy. I go, but when I speak, asses move. I go, that's leadership. People need to understand, you know, what you stand for, what you will tolerate, what your expectations are. That's just leadership. And so, you know, even with the social media, because they know, you know, that it will get back to me because my son, thankfully, is really good at it. And he kind of keeps his eye on everything for his dad. But I told them, you know, this, I want to have a social media platform that's realistic and represents me. And you know, I'm not Gary V. I don't drop F-bombs or whatever, and that's fine with him, but I'm not going to like say anything that's going to really shock anybody. It's just not my style.
So do you have a social media strategy or?
Yeah, I have an incredible team and they're one of the best strategy teams in the world. I mean, they're great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they're as good as you can get. But when I met with them, I wanted to share with them my values. I'm like, listen, I'm not selling courses that make unrealistic promises. I said, one out of every two startup fails. I go, that's, you know, so it's hard to sell a course when you already go into it with a 50% failure rate. You know, so I just had to communicate with them. I didn't, you know, I don't want to be like other people in this space that make bodacious promises. That's for them. I get jazzed about starting businesses. I want to show people how to start real businesses, not all the hype and all the mindset and all the, I mean, they're tools, but at the end of the day, you got to know the fundamentals of how to start and grow a business to do it. And I know how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm probably not the sexiest person to follow.
But on your, hey, if it works, that's sexy.
Yeah. But I mean, 100,000 people, I have a private account and I have 100,000 people that have followed me in 6 months. So I'm doing something right.
So is it, that's what I'm trying to understand though. Like you have a good team and do they say, okay, you know, to do well on Instagram, you need to cover these topics at this rate, blah, blah, blah. Or you're like, look, I'm going to speak when I'm moved, right? When I feel like I have something to say, and then y'all just promote it when I give it to you.
No, I have to follow. In other words, they give me the fundamentals of social media. Like they, Sean, okay, you got to post something every day. Okay. So they'll give me that. Now regarding content, they'll say to me, you know, this is kind of what we would like you to do. They'll give me examples of it based on other people. They'll show me other people in social media, but then all the content is my original. So I'll go to the studio and I'll create all the stories that I want, but they're all original. Everything's original to me, but no, they were fantastic. They were like, you know, they took a few weeks to kind of come up with what they felt like would work with me. They tried to find other people on social media that were similar in style, like a John Maxwell, a John Gordon, you know, somebody who fits my value structure maybe, and more my, how I would communicate. And they're like, okay, it works for other people. This is how we're going to do it. Yeah, no, that's the key to having great teams is you have to have alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And these people were very aligned with what I wanted. And you know, they're probably, they may be one of the best. So, I mean, I know who they work with. So I can say that there may be one of the media teams on the planet.
And would you say it's
who they work with? Yeah. Who they work with would definitely say they're one of the best on the planet.
Would you say it's moving the needle for you?
I think it, you know, I think we're going into the second phase of it. I think that we went into this with kind of like a 2-year. I'm a realist. And I think initially when we went into social media, it was like, you have to have this many people to have credibility. Okay. Now we're going to the next phase of monetizing that, because I'm a business guy. And what I told them is, I don't care how big the following is. If it doesn't make money, then it's a vanity project.
Right.
So I keep them accountable to what I believe works, and that I'm like, you guys can do everything you want, but I tell them this, there's only one measuring stick for success. If we don't make money with this platform, I don't care how big you grew it, it failed. So this all has to come into the equal sign, monetization. And if Instagram is the vehicle, that's fine. You guys got to show me how to monetize it. I mean, I made it clear to them, all, you know, this is great. You build it to 100,000 or 250,000 people. But if you don't make money, it failed. In my opinion, I'm a business guy, it failed. The law of profit says if you didn't make money, no matter how good your idea was, it wasn't a good idea. No matter what your strategy was, if you didn't make profit, it wasn't a good strategy. So I still hold them to the monetization.
Mm-hmm. Can people be real or valid or whatever word without a big social media presence?
I mean, I think you can. I think, you know, you could write books. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ways to be credible. You can be credible because you write articles and they've been published. So that would be one way to be credible. I think if you could write for Forbes and Entrepreneur Magazine or whatever fits your space, you could be credible. I think you could write a book that would make you credible. And then I think you can just post stuff within your space that you understand and how it resonates. It may take more time to resonate, but there's a following. There's somebody who will darn near follow anybody, you know? So I just think you got to be you and find your area of expertise and be, you know, and like as Gary Vee says, just post it every day at some point, see what happens.
Yeah.
But I think you got to be authentic. I think that's the most important thing is you have to be authentic. I think it's hard to, I just don't know how you could fake it for years, like even on social media. And just to me, that'd be like feeding a dragon.
Yeah. It's like, I agree 100%. It just seems like almost people become caricatures of themselves, right? They are overly authentic. They're trying to be authentic. And as a result, they're coming across as inauthentic
because they're
trying too hard. I don't need to see everything in your whole life just for transparency and authenticity.
I agree. And I think it would never work. Like with my wife, that would never fly. I mean, there's definitely a separation of what we would be allowed to show and all that. I think you got to find something that fits your value structure that you're comfortable with, that your family's comfortable with. I don't believe everybody wants to see everything. They only want to see it if you want to show it. But if they can tell that it's not you, then it doesn't work. To me, it's just, you know, I think you got to find somebody online, you know, find somebody through social media that you can parallel and just kind of like start following people that are similar in style to who you would be. That's what I started doing. I try to find people that were, you know, weren't like P.T. Barnum way over the top and, you know, kind of just talked and were smart and were I'm a information guy. I don't like hype. I want to give you the granular steps to how to start a business and all of that. So I think, you know, find people online that fit your, you know, what you're trying to do and mirror them a little bit.
Yep. And people should do that with you, right?
Hey, they're welcome to. I'm the boringest follow on Instagram, but I give you if you want to learn how to start a business, I'm the best follow. So that's how I'd share it with you.
And so everything is linked here. So it's Sean Castrina with a C, right? S-E-A-N, SeanCastrina.com. Got your book there. You're giving away right now. Social media links, right? I can find you from there.
Yep, to Instagram.
Linking into everything else, yeah. Right?
Absolutely.
And that's a real picture of you with a plane, not a...
That's a real one.
Have to rent the car, rent everything out, and then while you're wearing a rented tux or okay, good.
Yeah, the whole thing.
A lot of posers out there, man. You know
I know it is comical, but no, I'm sitting in a 9,000 square feet house with 10 bathrooms and a guest house, so I'm for real.
All right. Well, my wife and our 7 kids were coming to visit because you can't say you don't have room.
No, we always have room. Appreciate you having me on the podcast.
Hey, man, it's been great. I took pages of notes here. We'll put out with the episode, and I appreciate you taking the time.
No, thank you so much, Wes. I appreciate it. I wish you well.
All right. Have a great day.
All right. Take care.
I need that home. My wife's looking at a $1.3 million house on a hill. I don't know. Kids are growing up. They're moving out. She wants a bigger house. I don't know. But hey, I hope you got a lot out of that. Check out his free book, The 8 Unbreakable Rules for Business Startup Success.
The Greatest Entrepreneur in the World, The Tale of Seven Pillars, Surviving Startup to Becoming the Giant, The World's Greatest Business Plan That Works. Check out his post, Leadership in Chaotic Times. You know, just a smart dude. What you see is what you get. All of my guests, I mean, they're honest people. They answer the tough questions, and I don't prepare these in advance. You know, they come out based on our conversation. These are questions I have, okay, sincere questions I have. So they're not posed. Rarely will I accept anybody's questions. You know, a lot of times I'll have agents or whatever, promoters, and they'll send me some things, and I'll skim it sometimes, but you know, sometimes they'll give me maybe a starter. But once we go down the rabbit hole, you know, I'm answering or asking the questions I want answered. And you can tell he held nothing back. So, you know, check out what he's working on. And like I said at the beginning, come join, come hang out in the Implementors, the advanced group. And I'll answer your questions. You know, every week we go live. And just taking my experience, my knowledge, my 50 years, good grief, of wisdom to help you sell more, faster, at higher margin, with less stress and more fun. All right? Theimplementors.com. Come join us. Now, go sell something.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.